Who? Aiken smiled.
My uncle Roderick killed one of them once.
I gave him a sharp look.
Would this be the uncle Roderick who got eaten by a dragon?
Aiken flushed.
He didn't get eaten, he said. He just got a little barbecued.
Rose glowered at us.
They're dangerous, she said crossly. Do not get in their way.
A spell would stop it, Aiken said.
It would have to be a strong spell, Rose told him. I've seen them injure or kill grown men. My father hates them. They get into the fields and start eating everything, even when they're in a good mood. The local squire likes to take his guests hunting for boar, armed with spears and crossbows. It's about the only thing he's ever done for us.
I looked at the muddy tracks. Can we drink some of the water?
Only if you know how to purify it, Rose said. But we can't stay here for long.
I nodded and followed her as she led us onwards. The sound of wild animals grew louder, crashing their way through the undergrowth. They didn't seem to want to show themselves, although I saw things in the distance, trying to get away from us. Rose seemed to think that was a good thing. If the animals were scared of humans, she insisted, it meant we were close to a human settlement. Rose slowed as we reached a path. It looked odd, as if the users couldn't decide if they wanted to keep it, or let it become overgrown and eventually fade back to nothing. A small piece of carved stone sat on the edge, a strange mark clearly visible on the top. It didn't seem magical.
A boundary marker, Rose told us. We must be close.
Aiken frowned. A marker?
Farmers like to know what is theirs, Rose said. There are a lot of disagreements over who owns what when several families are forced to live and work together.
She shrugged.
I'd better go on alone while you two wait here, she added. I don't want them to see you until I've had a chance to talk to whoever's in charge.
I hesitated.
Are you sure? What if you don't speak the language?
I'll have to make do, Rose said.
But if they see you two, they may jump to the wrong conclusion. We don't want them thinking we might be dangerous.
Okay, I said reluctantly. Be careful.
Chapter 34.
I sat down as Rose vanished into the distance, feeling, I wasn't sure what I felt. Tired, yes, and what? Too much had happened in too short a space of time for me to process it, let alone decide what to do. And I couldn't turn to anyone, even my family, for help. Dad, I had no idea what Dad would want to do, if I told him the truth. Our family depended on magic. Aiken sat down next to me, looking as tired as I felt. I somehow mustered the energy to smile, despite everything. His father and mine were enemies, and yet we'd become friends somehow. We'd gone through too much together for me to think of him as an enemy, but what would he do if he learnt the truth? What would Rose do? What would... I sighed, feeling the scroll in my pocket. It would be better, perhaps, if the truth never came out. I could take it to my grave.
She might not come back, Aiken said. What do we do then?
I shot him a sharp look.
She won't abandon us.
That's not what I'm worried about, Aiken said.
A flock of small birds flew through the trees and vanished in the distance.
They might take her prisoner, or kill her.
She's a farmer, I pointed out.
She's also a magician, Aiken said. And she's a stranger. And if she's right about these people hiding, they might not want to let her go. Or us.
I frowned. Aiken and Rose had magic, and I had my objects of power. Magic didn't make people invincible. I'd humiliated my sisters often enough to make that clear. But we could probably fight our way out if necessary, unless the farmers had magic of their own. I didn't know why or how they'd made contact with Feruza, but they might have a magician or two working for them.
That would make matters much more dangerous. We'll wait until nightfall, I said, looking up. It was hard to be sure, but judging by the sun, it was early afternoon. If she doesn't come back, we'll go looking for her then. Aiken nodded. I felt a sudden rush of warm affection. I couldn't imagine Alana or Bella, or Isabella, being able to put their lives on the line for a commoner. Magic or no magic. Aiken was clearly made from different cloth. Perhaps his father had a point after all, when he insisted that Aiken would succeed him. Isabella would just drive House Ruben into a pointless feud that would eventually unite the entire city against the family. And yet, our families are enemies, I thought grimly. What happens if we have to fight in the future? I looked down at my hands. There were countless stage shows. I'd watched a couple, although Mum had barred us from going too often, featuring feuding families that were forced to bury the feuds after their heirs fell in love and got married. The ones that ended well were nice stories, I supposed, but they were unrealistic. Two heirs marrying didn't make the problems just go away. Aiken and I might end up facing each other, no matter how much we liked each other. The only way to avoid it, perhaps, was to leave. We should swear a blood oath, Aiken said suddenly. The three of us. I blinked in surprise. His thoughts had clearly been moving along the same lines as mine, and then nodded slowly. A blood oath would make it impossible for us to fight each other, although I wasn't sure if it would affect me. There was no magic in my blood, was there? Or, now I knew about the magic field, could I give myself magic? It was a tempting thought, despite the dangers. And yet, I just didn't know enough to be sure. When we get home, we'll think about it, I said. Blood oaths carried implications. I'd have to make sure Rose knew what they were before she swore the oath. We'd be siblings in magic, if not in blood. What would your father say? Aiken's eyes darkened. He wouldn't be pleased, he said. But if we did it without asking him... His voice trailed off slowly. We'll discuss it later, he said. He changed the subject. Who do you think Firouza is working for? I allowed myself a moment of relief. I don't know, I said. But they clearly want to cause trouble. Or maybe they just want to loot the city, Aiken speculated. They might have wanted the objects of power to sift through the wreckage. It was possible, I supposed, but it didn't seem likely. I didn't think that looters would have use for a ward cracker, not here. The wards were gone, replaced by wild magic. Maybe they'd found a tomb they intended to raid, but even that seemed unlikely. Some of the tools I'd made for Firouza could only really be used to raid a magician's house, or break into a city, or a school. The sooner we get home, the better, I said tersely. Dad had to be warned. I don't know if they'll have been able to salvage the potion. Aiken frowned. Why didn't you take it with us? I shook my head. Too dangerous, I said. The potion was terrifyingly volatile. Caitlin's boost was far safer, and it had nearly killed Rose and I. I did a few tricks that might spoil it, if they don't catch on in time. I hope you're right, Aiken said. I hoped he was right too, but I was worried. The potion clearly hadn't exploded, or Firouza would have worse problems than hunting for us. Unless it had exploded after she'd led most of her people out to search the ruins. But I shook my head again. There was no point in worrying about it now. The potion wouldn't last long, unless they'd invented a completely new way to stabilize it. I didn't think that anyone, even Mum, could do that without triggering an explosion.
I just don't see who benefits, Aiken said after a moment. Who wants to get two great houses mad at him?
I shrugged. I'd turned it over and over in my mind, but I hadn't come up with anything beyond wild speculation. Aiken's father might want to kidnap or kill me, just to preserve the balance of power. Yet he wouldn't want to risk his son. And there weren't many other potential suspects who wanted to pick a fight with two great houses. Perhaps Rolf hadn't meant to kidnap Aiken. He might have exceeded his orders. But they didn't have to turn Aiken into a slave, I thought. They could have just returned Aiken, perhaps making a show of ransoming him, if they'd taken him by accident. It would have made Dad wonder if they'd ransom me too. But who else was there? The king? No, he would have just summoned me to Tintagel. A foreign enemy? Maybe more likely, but they'd be risking a war. And surely it would have been safer to kill me, rather than risk using me. I had no doubt that every other kingdom was searching for their own zeros, now they knew the secret. It wouldn't be that hard, either. Unless they get someone who doesn't want to learn how to forge, I thought. They couldn't guarantee finding someone trained and willing to work. I dismissed the thought with a bitter shrug. Feruza couldn't cast compulsion spells on me, but she'd found other ways to get me to work. Someone else would do the same if they wished. Regular beatings would suffice, I imagined. A zero without my skills wouldn't even be able to plan an escape, let alone carry it out. "Perhaps Lord Rotherham is behind it," Aiken mused. "He stands to gain if your house and mine goes to war." "Perhaps," I agreed. House Rotherham was smaller than either of ours, but let's you and him fight was an old and proud tradition among the great houses. It would still be a serious risk. I looked up as I heard someone walking down the path. Aiken rose, leaning on a tree. I lifted the spellcaster, ready to fight if necessary. Rose stepped into view, followed by a fresh-faced young woman a handful of years older. She wore a very practical set of blue trousers and a loose shirt, her blonde hair falling over her muscular shoulders. Her gaze was sharp, but I saw her eyes go wide as she saw me. I looked a mess. "This is Valeria," Rose said. "She has agreed to take us in, for the moment." Aiken frowned as he straightened up.
"For the moment?"
"For a day or two," Valeria said. Her voice was soft but oddly accented. I had the distant impression that her family hadn't come from Tintagel. "It depends on how well you can forge." I felt a flicker of alarm. "How well I can forge?" "They have old devices they want fixed," Rose said hastily. "I said you might be able to fix them." "I might," I confirmed. I had a handful of tools and supplies with me, but not enough to guarantee anything. "It would depend on the facilities." Valeria gave me an odd little bow. "If you will come with us, we will find you a place," she said. "Come." She turned and walked down the path. I glanced at Rose, then at Aiken. Rose seemed fine, but concerned. Aiken looked doubtful. And yet there was nowhere else we could go. I shrugged and followed Valeria as she walked. Her legs moved oddly, as if they'd been injured at some point and never mended. But then there probably weren't any trained healers within 100 miles. The path grew wider as we reached the edge of the forest. I stopped dead as I stared at the fields. They were small, far smaller than the fields I'd seen on the estate, yet blooming with life. Pens held sheep, goats, and pigs, the latter smaller than the wild boar we'd seen in the forest. A tiny selection of buildings sat at the far end of the clearing, cunningly woven into the trees. My eyes might have passed over them completely if I hadn't known they were there. The inhabitants had concealed their presence as much as possible. I donned the spectacles, looking around with interest. There didn't seem to be much magic in the fields, save for a single charm lingering on a scarecrow. I puzzled over it for a long moment, then decided it was probably meant to repel birds and insects. It was loose enough that I guessed it needed to be renewed every week. But then, basic cantrips rarely lasted long. I wondered who cast the spell, then decided it didn't matter. Almost anyone could cast it with little practice. I was perhaps the only one on the farm who couldn't.
"You'll be housed in the lower bedroom," Valeria informed us.
She led the way towards a two-story farmhouse, covered in so many plants that it was practically invisible.
"I'm afraid there's very little privacy here."
"Ouch," Aiken muttered. I made a face, but shrugged. There was no point in arguing. Besides, I'd spent the last 6 months at boarding school, when I hadn't been in a cell. True privacy was rare at the best of times. I just hoped there was water and somewhere to wash. My face felt as if it was caked in mud and dust. Mum would definitely have thrown up her hands in horror. A handful of people emerged from the far side of the farmhouse and stared at us. I stared back, noting how fit and healthy they looked. The clothes they wore were simple, yet they seemed to be in good spirits. Their eyes lingered on me, long enough to make me feel awkward. I didn't look that bad, did I? It couldn't be as bad as the day Alana had pushed me into a muddy puddle when we'd both been five. We'd been meant to go to a party, but we'd had to go home instead. Mum had been furious. "Because she'd given her word she'd go," I recalled, "and then she had to stay with us instead." I heard them talking amongst themselves in low voices as we walked into the farmhouse. I only picked up a handful of words, none of which meant anything to me. I'd thought I knew all of the local languages in this part of the world, but evidently not. Unless the farmers had come from further away than I'd realized. It didn't seem likely. They certainly didn't look that different to Rose or Aiken.
"You can wash with the lads," Valeria said, addressing Aiken. Her voice was utterly uncompromising. "The girls can have the wash tub here. I can bring clean towels and clothes in a minute." Aiken nodded.
Valeria led us into the washroom, pointed out a wash tub filled with cold water, and then led him out of the room. I glanced around, checking that we weren't being watched. The wooden walls struck me as remarkably flimsy. I could see chinks of light beaming through the walls. And yet, I shook my head as Rose put a finger in the tub, then cast a spell to warm the water. It wasn't my place. I couldn't imagine what it must be like to grow up in such a closed community.
"It has its advantages and disadvantages," Rose said when I asked. "There are no strangers here. Everyone knows everyone else. There's always someone to watch you when you're a child and your parents have to work. But you can rest assured that any misbehavior will also get back to your parents, and you will be punished. And anyone who is a little bit different will find it hard to fit in."
"Just like high society, then," I said. Rose snorted.
"I once had to watch a young man being put in the stocks for theft," she said dryly. "He sat there for 2 days, while everyone pointed and laughed. And when he was released, he left the village. We never saw him again."
I smiled. "Definitely like high society." The door opened, revealing Valeria. She passed us a set of clothes, shirts and trousers, and a pair of towels. I took them, thanking her with a nod. She eyed me for a long moment, then turned and walked out of the room. I had the distinct impression that she wasn't entirely pleased to see us. We were being hunted. Our enemies wouldn't hesitate to destroy the farmhouses just to get at us. I couldn't help wondering just how much Valeria actually knew. Rose caught my arm.
"One thing to bear in mind," she said as she started to undress. "They will not have much food to go around. Don't eat too much, whatever you do."
My stomach growled. "I'll do my best," I said. My fingers seemed to be having problems undoing my shirt. "You'd better tell Aiken that too." I put the scroll to one side, then undressed hastily, trying to ignore the dust and mud falling to the ground. It felt as though the mud was the only thing holding my tattered clothes together. They certainly didn't look as though they could be washed, then worn again.
I splashed hot water on my body, washed myself as thoroughly as I could, then dressed hastily. The clothes felt itchy against my bare skin, but they were clean. I'd put up with any amount of itching just to be clean. "Help me wipe up the mess," Rose said when we were both dressed. Her voice was very firm. "We don't want to make extra work for Valeria." I flushed, embarrassed. I'd never thought of that, although I should have. Sandy had forced me to clean the showers back at Jude's. But then there was hot running water to help. I had no idea how Valeria had filled the wash tub without magic. Perhaps she'd just used a bucket and walked back and forth until the wash tub was filled. Or perhaps someone else had done it for her. Or perhaps it was meant for someone else, I thought. I felt a sudden pang of guilt. Valeria couldn't have known we were coming, yet the wash tub had been filled. Were the others meant to wash? We walked outside. The sun was steadily sinking behind the distant hills, casting long shadows over the land. It was cooler, somewhat to my relief. Valeria was waiting outside, chatting to Aiken. He'd had etiquette drilled into his head from birth, but he still looked flustered. Valeria was a few years older, pretty and paying attention to him. A dangerous combination. I concealed my amusement as Valeria led us past the field and into another large building. A giant table was covered with food, surrounded by farmers and their children. The men were sitting at the table, the younger girls, around my age, pouring drinks or serving food. And yet, they all fell silent and looked at us as we walked into the room. I couldn't shake the feeling they were staring at me. Valeria introduced us to a handful of older men and women, but the names blurred together as hunger gnawed at me. Rose seemed to hold her own, bowing her head to the men and hugging the women. I found myself totally lost, unsure how to act. All I could do was curtsy to the elders, which they seemed to find amusing. I would have been angry if I wasn't so hungry. And they were all staring at me. "Please, eat," Valeria said finally. Her voice was warm. "And then you can rest." "Thank you," I said. It was hard, so hard to remember Rose's warning. "It looks very good." "Eat," Valeria said. "Please." Chapter 35. "Wake up," Rose said. A cock was crying outside, loudly. "How are you feeling?" I started, trying to remember where we were. The farm. We'd found a farm. I would have wondered just how much of the last week had been a dream, if I hadn't been covered in aches and pains. The blankets Valeria had given us were better than a hard stone floor, but not by much. I told myself to stop being ungrateful as I sat upright, rubbing my arms to smooth out the aches. It was better than being left to Farouza's tender mercies. "Strange," I said. I hadn't dreamed. I'd been too tired to dream. The scroll remained under the blankets where I'd left it. "What time is it?" "Dawn," Rose said. She snickered. "I'm afraid you don't get to sleep late on a farm." "And to think I thought that Mum was bad," I muttered. I stood on wobbly legs and inspected myself. My dark skin was covered with mottled bruises. "If I'm forging, what are you going to be doing?" "Helping with the farm," Rose said. "And probably making sure Aiken doesn't make too big a mess of things." I had to smile. Aiken and I were both out of place on the farm. He'd probably start demolishing a flower bed on the grounds that looked as if it was covered in weeds. Alana had done that once, when she'd been grounded for something or other, and the poor gardener had been left in tears. Mum had been beyond furious when she'd heard of it. We dressed slowly, then went to the other farmhouse for breakfast. This time everyone seemed to be running in, grabbing a bowl of food and heading back out again. Rose took a bowl, filled it with a strange combination of potatoes, eggs, ham, and bacon, then passed it to me. I hesitated, then started to eat. It was surprisingly filling.
"Make sure you eat plenty," Valeria ordered, appearing beside us. "You'll need to keep up your strength."
I nodded curtly as I ate. It was bland. I doubted Mum would let Henry serve it for breakfast, but definitely filling. Aiken was on the other side of the table, stuffing himself. A middle-aged woman was sitting next to Aiken, encouraging him to eat. I glanced at Rose, then decided the women knew what the farmers could and couldn't spare. Potatoes were cheap anyway. They were a staple food in Shalott. The children were still staring at me, I noticed, as I finished the bowl. They weren't very subtle about it either. The older ones looked embarrassed when I caught them staring, but the younger ones just stared back. It made no sense to me. People had stared at me at school, but that had been because they'd known who I was. The farmers didn't, did they? I could be any old forger.
"Meet me outside in a moment," Valeria told me. "I'll take you to the forge."
"I have to go fetch my bag," I said. I'd left it in our bedroom along with the scroll. "I'll be there in a moment." I hurried out the door, half hoping Rose would follow me. She didn't. Instead, I passed two old farmers, both of whom stared at me. I resisted the urge to bite out a curse as I walked into the farmhouse and scooped up the bag, then the scroll. Leaving it hidden wasn't an option. Rose might not be able to read old script, although she had been learning at Jude's, but Aiken definitely could. I didn't want to think about what would happen if he learned the truth. Valeria was waiting for me, impatiently, when I returned.
"This way," she said. "The forge has been untouched for 2 years. I hope it is still usable."
I frowned. Why was it even here?
"A traveling forger married my third cousin," Valeria said curtly. She sounded oddly displeased. "He was interested in studying the cursed city. Every year he would go to the city and one day he didn't come back. His wife eventually closed the forge and abandoned it. The tools he forged for us didn't last."
I nodded slowly. I'd seen the city and heard the stories. I could easily believe that someone had gone there and never come back. It had happened 1,000 times or more. I was surprised his wife had even let him go. And yet, I could understand what the forger had wanted. The man who cracked the secret behind objects of power would be renowned. And he was looking in the wrong direction, I thought. They were all looking in the wrong direction. I took a breath. "Can I ask a question?" Valeria stopped and turned to look at me. Her blue eyes were sharp.
"You may ask," she said. "I may not answer."
"Everyone was staring at me," I said. "Why?"
"It is very unusual to see someone of your skin color here," Valeria told me. "I will rebuke them for staring."
Just like I'd stare at a Hang Choese man, I thought ruefully. It had never occurred to me that my skin color would pose a problem. But if I stick out like a sore thumb, Feruza won't have any trouble finding me. I groaned. Valeria seemed a good person, yet Dad had insisted more than once that everyone had a price. Find a person's price and you could get them to do anything. It might not be money, he'd cautioned, but everyone wanted something. I'd been kidnapped because I wanted fame and a patronage network. Rolf had played me and I'd fallen for it, hook, line and sinker. And if Feruza found out what Valeria wanted, Valeria might hand us over without a second thought. "We can't stay here for long," I told myself. "The longer we stay here, the greater the chance of being discovered." Valeria stopped outside a darkened building, hidden in the forest.
"This was his territory," she said. "Is it safe to remove the bolt?"
I snapped on my spectacles and examined the wooden barn. There was a hex attached to the upper bolt, so faded that I wasn't sure what, if anything, it would do. I poked it with the dispeller anyway, then helped Valeria pick up and lower the bolt to the ground. She was strong, I realized. I wasn't sure I could have removed the bolt on my own. I definitely didn't want to get into a fight with her. Valeria pulled open the door, allowing light to spill into the barn. The forge stood in the center, surrounded by a preservation spell. Another was wrapped around the cupboards, keeping their contents safe. I felt myself smiling as I took a step forward, feeling the musty air tickling my throat. I'd have to open the windows and probably the chimney, but I could work here. No one has disturbed this place since he vanished, Valeria told me. We don't have any more supplies. I used the dispeller to release the cupboards, then opened them. Inside was a neat collection of wood, metal, and potion ingredients. I checked the labels and frowned. The ingredients should be safe to use, but I had no way to be sure. It was quite possible the preservation spell had contaminated them. I'd have to be very careful what I did, I realized numbly. There was no hope of resupply until we got home. It should be fine, I said. I released the forge and inspected it, then the handful of tools. It wasn't that well-equipped, compared to my workroom at home, but it would do. Give me a couple of hours to clean everything, then you can tell me what you want. Valeria frowned. Do you want me to ask some of the children to help? No, thank you, I said. Dad had told me time and time again that I needed to take care of my tools myself. He wouldn't let me ask the maids to do more than sweep the floor. Even that was pushing it. I need to make sure I know where everything is. Then come find me when you're ready, Valeria said. There are some devices we need fixed. I nodded and started to work. The preservation spells had kept the dust from getting into the forge, or the cupboards, but the rest of the barn was coated in dust. I opened the windows, found the key to open the chimney, then started to wipe up the dust as best as I could. It felt clammy against my skin, but I'd had worse. I made a mental list of tools and supplies, including some that needed to be replaced soon, as I worked, quietly cataloging what I could and couldn't do. The forger who'd owned the barn, Valeria had never mentioned his name, had piled a number of metallic devices into the corner. Some of them were strange, but others were recognizable. They'd once been objects of power. They might not be repairable, I thought, as I dusted them, but I can probably reuse the metal. I sighed as I went through the pile. There was a device that looked like a crab skeleton, complete with teeth and claws. I tried to figure it out, then gave up. Maybe it was an animated guard of some kind, although I'd never seen anything like it. Gargoyles and moving statues were far more traditional. Another looked like the wreckage of a flying machine, although far smaller. A third looked like a horseless carriage, with an oddly familiar device in the front. It took me a moment to realize that it was a scaled-up version of the toy Magister Tallyman had shown me. Parts of it must have rotted away, I mused. Too many pieces were missing. Even the object of power is useless now. And yet, I looked at the wreckage, working out how the object of power had provided the energy that made the carriage move. It wasn't that complex, not really. Aiken could build the rest of the carriage, if I produced the object of power itself. And who knew what we could do then? I reached for a notebook, then stopped myself. I didn't have a notebook, unless I wanted to write on the scroll. Most forgers would have had at least one notebook in their forge, but I couldn't see one. I made a mental note to ask Valeria if she had any paper, then started to put the concept together in my mind. Now I knew about the magic field. Now I knew where the power actually came from. I thought I understood precisely how we could get home. Someone moved behind me. I spun around, raising the spellcaster even though I knew it was already too late. If Feruza had caught up with us. A small girl stood there, wearing a shapeless garment and a funny expression. I thought she was 7,
although it was hard to be sure. She'd have been starting her magic studies if she'd been born to one of the great houses. She was staring at my face as if she didn't quite think I was real.
"It's lunchtime,"
she said, spacing the words out carefully. Perhaps it wasn't her native tongue.
"Will you come and eat?"
I blinked in surprise. Lunchtime? How long had I been working? I glanced at the sun. It was just about midday. I'd worked hard, I knew, but it had taken longer than I'd expected. I'd lost track of time. It would have pleased me, I supposed, if I hadn't been worried. The girl was looking at me expectantly.
"Will you?"
"Coming," I said.
"I always wanted to look in here," the girl said.
She reminded me suddenly of myself. I'd always asked questions, too.
"Mummy scolded me when I tried to open the window."
She peered past me.
"What is that?"
"That is a forge," I said. I pushed her out gently and closed the door. "It's where metal is heated and then reshaped."
"It sounds like fun," the girl informed me. "Is it a kind of blacksmithing?"
"Just a little," I said wryly as I brushed myself down. Dust fell everywhere. "But don't say that to anyone else." I smiled at her confusion, even though it wasn't really funny. I knew forgers who would have cursed her for daring to compare their art to blacksmithing. Blacksmiths don't use magic, not beyond very basic spells. They certainly don't forge magical blades. But then a broken magical sword would shatter into 1,000 pieces if it was smashed into a mundane blade. We walked back to the farmhouse, where Valeria and the other girls were serving food to the men. Aiken looked tired. Rose, beside him, seemed to be having trouble concealing her amusement. The other young men were eyeing him. I suspected he'd made something of a fool of himself, although it was his first day on the farm. I took a bowl of stew and bread myself, then sat down next to Rose and Aiken. Valeria eyed the three of us, but said nothing. "We're having a good time," Rose said softly. "But we can't stay for long." Aiken groaned.
"Is it always like this?"
"Pretty much," Rose said. "The men work in the fields, the women cook, clean, and take care of the animals. As soon as a child is old enough to work, they work. They work every day, even holidays. The work is never ending on the farm." Her eyes swept the room. I followed her gaze. "The grown men here are all children of the original farmers," she added softly. "The young women all married into the extended family. The women born here probably married out as soon as they reached marrying age. Valeria will be married off herself in a couple of years, if she isn't already engaged. I'm surprised she's still here."
"But there are several families here," Aiken said, puzzled.
"The elders will keep very close track of the bloodlines," Rose said. "Everyone here will be a cousin, I think. The wider community will hold dances every year for boys and girls to meet partners who aren't too close to them." I frowned. "How big is the community?"
"I don't know," Rose said. "I'd say there were at least 10 similar farming communities in the same general area, but I don't know."
Valeria was tight-lipped on the subject. Aiken glanced at her.
"This could have been you, couldn't it?"
Rose looked pained. "I always knew I'd be moving away. Once someone asked for my hand in marriage," she said. "I just ended up leaving sooner than I'd expected." I reached out and squeezed her hand. Rose had opportunities that most of her friends and family couldn't even dream of. Yet they came with a price. By the time she graduated, she would have nothing in common with her former friends, and her family would have effectively disowned her. Even now, she was separate from the rest of the farmers, even though she was one of them.
she might never find her place again. Valeria walked over to us as I finished my plate.
How is the forge?
Ready to use, I said. I noticed Aiken listening and smiled at him.
What do you want me to forge?
I have a list, Valeria said. Her voice was clipped. Come with me. I listened as we made our way back to the forge. Some of the devices of power she wanted were relatively simple. Scythes that never blunted, farming tools that never decayed, while others were surprisingly complex. I understood, suddenly, precisely why the original forger had been welcome in the community. The tools he'd forged for them had made their lives easier. I could stay here, I thought suddenly. It tempted me, just for a second. The scroll could be destroyed, the secret dying with me. Rose would be happy in the community, even Aiken might come around. But it would mean never seeing my family again, ever. Aiken and Rose would miss their families too. I promised myself, silently, that I'd do what I could to thank the farmers, after I made it home. Perhaps Dad could ensure they weren't disturbed by the taxmen.
Let me know how much of this you can do in a day or two, Valeria said as we reached the forge. I don't know how long you can stay here.
I should be able to do some of it, I assured her. If she needed us, she'd probably try to keep us for longer. A source of devices of power would be priceless to the farmers. But rumors of a dark-skinned girl and an aristocratic brat were probably already spreading through the community. It wouldn't be long before they reached whoever was supplying food to our former captors.
And there's something else I need to make for myself.
Very good, Valeria said. She looked around the forge, disapproval evident in her cold gaze.
I'll come and find you when it's dinner time.
And don't go wandering around, I finished silently. I was tempted to ask her why she disliked the forge, or maybe it was me. But I doubted I would get a straight answer. You want me to stay here. I shrugged as she turned and walked out of the forge. Valeria seemed to be in two minds about keeping us here, but as long as we could stay for a day or two, it didn't matter. We could leave, once we were rested and fed. And then I smiled. I'd had an idea. And if it worked, we could get home very quickly indeed. Chapter 36 Valeria, I discovered over the next 2 days, was a harsh mistress. She wasn't as impolite as Fariza, to be fair. I wasn't her prisoner. But she had a whole list of objects and devices of power that needed to be fixed or rebuilt from scratch. Frictionless tools, ever-sharp blades, water purifiers, heat exchangers. I worked constantly, carefully putting them together while wishing for a better workshop. The abandoned forge simply didn't have an abundance of supplies. Valeria hasn't heard of anyone approaching the community, Rose said at lunch. We don't know who was selling food to our captors. Aiken scowled, displeased. How do we know they're not keeping us here so we can be recaptured? He rubbed his forearm. There was a nasty bruise, clearly visible against his pale skin. He hadn't been enjoying the farming life at all, although he knew enough magic to make himself useful in other ways. I'd have expected Valeria to put him to work in the forge, but apparently not. Perhaps she just felt that he should be working in the fields.
They gave us their oath of hospitality, Rose told him. They won't break it.
Ha, Aiken muttered. How much is an oath worth?
Rose shot him an irritated look. Out here? Quite a bit.
I held up a hand to keep them from arguing. Rose was used to the farming life, and I had my forge, but Aiken, he simply didn't fit into the farm. And he was right. Word of our presence was spreading, slowly but surely. It wouldn't be long before Fariza heard of us and came calling, if she hadn't been trapped in the collapsing villa. I didn't think it was too likely. She was strong enough to defend herself against falling debris. Unless she was caught when I brought the roof down on her head, I thought, as dinner came to an end. Or she might have destroyed her base and gone into hiding. She might have assumed that we'd made it home already. I shook my head. It was wishful thinking, and I knew it. Whoever was backing Firouza would know when we made it home. Until then, Firouza could still redeem herself by recapturing us. She might still be searching the ruins, or she might have reasoned that we would have headed away from the city as fast as possible. I bid farewell to my friends and walked back to the forge, thinking hard. What would I do in her place? I couldn't think of many options beyond searching the surrounding area for a trio of runaways. Rose changed the subject.
Good food?
I nodded. The food was bland, yet there was something about it I liked. Perhaps it was the way the women brought out the natural flavors, rather than smothering the meat in fancy sauce. But we couldn't stay. Valeria was waiting for me outside the forge when I arrived.
Did you finish the scythes?
I did,
I said, leading her inside. The scythes sat on the bench, just waiting to be taken out and put to work. I'd carved runes into the metal, then waited for the spell form, the very basic spell form, to take shape.
They'll cut through anything and never lose their sharpness.
Very good, Valeria said. And the other projects?
She cast her eyes over the collection of tools and reworked metal. I wondered grimly just how much she actually knew about forging. She hadn't been raised in a magical family, yet a skilled forger would have realized I'd been working on a number of projects I hadn't told her about. I wasn't sure how she'd react, if she knew the truth. Valeria was unpredictable. And if she does want to keep us here, I thought sourly, she won't want to give us any chance to escape. It wasn't a pleasant thought, but it had to be faced. Valeria and her people were hiding from the aristocracy. The king might wish to extend our borders towards the Eternal City if he knew it was possible to survive, and even prosper, so close to the cursed lands. I didn't think he'd want to take the risk, not when it might provoke a war with our neighbors, but I had no way to be sure. Valeria had good reason not to want to either hand us over to our former captors or let us go home.
They're coming along, I said.
I indicated one of the frameworks, hoping she didn't have the knowledge to be aware that I was being economical with the truth. The thresher is taking shape, slowly. I'm hoping to have it finished in the next couple of days. Valeria didn't react to my words, something that bothered me. Ice ran down my spine. She didn't expect us to leave, even though our planned departure date had already been pushed back twice. And that meant... I wondered grimly if I should expect to have my throat slit in the night. Akin and Rose might be able to fit in with the farmers, but me? It was obvious that I hadn't been born anywhere near the community. But Akin won't want to stay here either, I reminded myself. And he has enough magic to make it difficult for them to keep him prisoner. I scowled, hating myself. The farmers had greeted our arrival with mixed feelings, yet they'd fed us. I shouldn't be so concerned about being betrayed. I hated myself for being careful, but I had no choice. Firouza had made it clear that I was an asset to be exploited, not a person in my own right. Valeria might feel the same way too.
Very good, Valeria said again. And after that...
I don't know, I told her. It was true, more or less. I'm running out of raw metal and supplies. Getting more will be a problem.
We can trade with scavengers, Valeria informed me. It won't be a problem.
She turned and strode out of the barn, leaving me speechless. She didn't mean for us to leave then. I wondered vaguely how they planned to keep us prisoner. Akin and Rose had their magic, I had my spellcasters. Did Valeria and her family have magic? I'd seen them use a handful of spells,
but that didn't prove they were trained magicians. Or were they simply planning to kill all three of us? We were liabilities, and they knew it. I turned back to the object of power that was starting to take shape on the bench. It was complex, yet strikingly simple. Understanding the truth behind magic, and how it flowed around and through objects of power, made it so much easier to forge. The spell form hadn't snapped into existence yet, but I picked up the etching tools and resumed carving runes into the metal. It should be ready to be triggered in an hour, and then we leave after dark, I told myself. Getting out of the farmhouse wouldn't be a problem, not with magic. And then we go straight home. The object of power felt warm under my hands as I tested each of the connections, wishing I had access to an apothecary. There was no way to be entirely sure that the metal was pure, not until I triggered the spell form. If it wasn't pure, I'd built redundancies into the design, but was grimly aware that there were limits. Flashes of raw magic, utterly out of control, would probably reduce the entire design to scrap metal in short order. It certainly wouldn't be able to get us home. I sighed and walked over to the nearest framework. It had been a carriage of some kind, once upon a time, or so I thought. All that mattered now was that it would provide a convenient host for the object of power, as well as giving us somewhere to sit. We'd have to hang on tightly. I had no idea how fast we'd actually move, but it should work. And it looks like a climbing frame, I thought wryly. The next one I put together, at home, will be much neater. I cleaned the carriage carefully, then attached straps to keep us in place. It should suffice. I hoped it would suffice. And if it didn't, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, I told myself. I walked back to the object of power and carefully carved the last runes into place. The object glowed with a brilliant light, burning so brightly that I feared I was going to set the entire barn on fire. I ducked down, covering my eyes as the light grew brighter, then snapped out of existence. I rose slowly. The object of power sat on the table, waiting for me. It looked odd, as if my mind couldn't quite grasp the details. And yet, I reached out and touched it, feeling a shimmer of potential pass through my mind. The object of power was ready to use. A voice echoed through the air. Dinner time! I picked up the object of power, concealed it near the framework, and then hurried out of the barn. The sun was slowly sinking in the distance, although it would be hours yet before it was dark. I silently plotted our next steps as I hurried to the farmhouse. We'd stay awake at night and sneak out when it was completely dark, using magic to conceal our passage. And then we'd go home. The children waved at me cheerfully. They weren't staring any longer. I wasn't sure if that was good or bad, although at least they weren't asking any more stupid questions. One of the boys had been smacked on the head by his mother, just for asking if I'd had a forging accident, and somehow miscolored my skin. Now, I was just part of the farm, as far as they were concerned. I wondered sourly if Valeria had encouraged them to welcome me. She could kill my friends and keep me prisoner, I thought. But she would have to keep a very sharp eye on me if she expects me to be actually useful. I pushed the thought to one side as I walked into the farmhouse and joined Rose. Aiken was nowhere to be seen. The tables were already covered in food, bread, cheese, cooked meat, eggs. I glanced around, puzzled. Where was Aiken? Rose nudged me. Some of the boys said they'd show him how to kick a ball around, she said. I think they're getting him to play with them. Oh, I said. Did the boys have time to play football? Did the girls play netball or softball or chess? I found it hard to believe. And yet, we'd played games at home. Maybe farmers played games too. Is he having fun? I think it's a pleasant change, Rose said. We took our food and walked to the table. A handful of older men congratulated me on my work, promising to find more tools for me to repair. I think they intended to hire me out to the community. Perhaps I wouldn't have minded if things had been different. If I'd never discovered my talents, would I have been happy here? Alana had certainly promised to kick me out of the family when our parents died. Maybe she would have exiled me to a farm and left me there. She would probably have locked me away in one of the estates, I thought bitterly. I'd heard stories of mad aunts in the attics, children who'd been locked away for being deformed or otherwise embarrassing. Why not a girl with no magic? And I would have gone mad there. Aiken came in looking tired and muddy. There were more bruises on his skin, but he also looked happy. It was fun, he said when I asked. But it was also rough. We ate dinner slowly, savoring every bite. I made sure to eat as much as I could, knowing that it might be quite some time before I could eat again. Rose eyed me sharply, then followed my lead. Perhaps she had her doubts too, even though she fitted into the farm better than either of us. I hoped Aiken would pick up the cue too. If nothing else, a day of hard work followed by football would give him an appetite. The ground shook violently. I started, one hand dropping to my spellcaster as a thunderous roar echoed through the air. People shouted and screamed, the women heading for the rear, as the men grabbed makeshift weapons and prepared to fight. I heard a cow mooing in pain as another flash of light flared outside, so bright it turned twilight into day. The farm was under attack. I jumped to my feet, holding the spellcaster tightly. What should we do? Fight? Or try to run? If we got to the barn, I cursed under my breath. I'd concealed my bag and the scroll in the barn. I didn't dare leave those, and the object of power, where our hunters might find them. And yet, how could we get to the barn? They're not blasting the buildings, I told myself. It was surprisingly reassuring. They can't be sure of where we are. A voice boomed, loud enough to be heard over the racket. Hand over the fugitives or your entire farm will be destroyed! There was another flash of blinding light. The sound of chickens squawking in pain suddenly cut off. I pulled my spectacles from my pocket and put them on. There were four sources of magic close by, close enough for their presence to be clearly visible, even through the wooden walls. Four magicians. They wouldn't need any more if the farmers didn't have any magicians on their side. I certainly hadn't seen any protective wards. Even a firstie could conjure enough fire to burn down the entire village. Valeria grabbed my shoulder. Her voice was high-pitched, tinged with panic. I'm sorry, but we can't stop them. I jabbed the spellcaster at her. She froze. The room gasped with shock. This way, I snapped. I waved the spellcaster around threateningly. Come on! The men seemed torn between charging at us and fighting the magicians outside. I led Aiken and Rose to the rear exit, spellcaster at the ready. A magician outside pointed a finger at me, casting a hex. The bracelet warmed, just for a second, as the hex snapped out of existence. I allowed myself a moment of relief, then jabbed the spellcaster at him repeatedly until he froze in place. The spell wouldn't last for long, but it should keep him in place long enough for us to get away. Crashes and bangs echoed from behind us as we sneaked around the farmhouse and crept towards the barn. Feruza's men didn't seem to be trying to burn down the entire farm, much to my relief. I didn't want to leave the farm in ashes, but it wouldn't be long before they ran out of patience and started casting stronger spells. There were no wards on the buildings, not even a simple ward to keep out supernatural vermin. Feruza could just cast a slumber spell and put all the defenders to sleep. It wouldn't have worked against a magical household, as such spells were easy to counter. Perhaps she wouldn't think of it. I hoped she wouldn't think of it. At least the women and children made it out, I thought. I hoped they'd be safe. I didn't really blame Valeria for wanting to hand us over, even though Feruza would have put us straight back in the cell. The farmers didn't stand a chance. I felt a pang of guilt, mingled with bitter rage.
We brought this down on them.
A building exploded in a flash of light just as we reached the barn. I glanced back, just in time to see the farmhouse catch fire. Feruza